I will be reading Mark chapter 10, verses 35 through to 45. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink, or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many."
Well, hello, my name's Stephen. I'm one of the ministers here. And all of my family and all my wife's family, they actually don't live in South Australia. They live over in New South Wales, which might sound a bit sad to you, you know, at this time of year. And it is a little bit. But on the upside, Christmas is so easy for us. I mean, look at me right now. Look at how relaxed I look. You should see some of you guys. I mean, some of you have got to go from one crazy aunt to the next all in the same day. There's none of that for me. In fact, I find it quite relaxing, actually, ringing my family on Christmas Day and hearing about all their kind of crazy antics. I've got a picture of my family, so you can get a bit of an idea why I find it so relaxing. My family, they all live near each other in New South Wales. And every year when I ring up, the story is always the same. It's semi-chaos. And my brother and his four kids, they don't believe in RSVPing for some reason. So every year they turn up with just a bag of chips. And as the washing up starts to happen, they leave just before it. Every year it drives my sisters nuts. And they ask, why do we even do this to ourselves? But still, every year, they do the same thing over and over again. The Christmas season, it's a strange thing when you think about it. It's such a strange mix of relaxing and yet slaving away, of happiness and yet so often of sadness as well, of being with the people you love and yet being driven crazy by the people that you love, of clarity about what really matters in life and yet moments of confusion as to what really matters as well. Christmas, it can be like this crazy washing machine of memories and hopes and emotions. Not that we really have the time to kind of sit back and even really notice it. So what I want to do is actually take the time to stop just for the next few minutes and to reflect on what it's all about. You know, if you zoom out as far as you can go, what's the big picture take of Christmas? And I mean like the really big picture. Because even if you consider the first Christmas, it feels like a confusing mix of all sorts of things. Like there's angels there and a baby and donkeys and shepherds and sometimes a little drummer boy. Honestly, I'm not even quite sure what a little drummer boy is or why someone thought it'd be a good idea to let him bash his drum near a newborn baby. Even the very first Christmas, when you think about it, is very confusing. So what we're going to do is skip all the details and just go straight to the big picture and ask, what's it all about? In that part of the Bible that was read just before, Jesus gives the big picture in just a couple of sentences. Listen again to why he says he came. He says, "For even the Son of Man," that's Jesus, he's talking about himself here, and he says, "Even I did not come to be served, but to serve." That's the big picture point of Christmas. It's that Jesus came to serve. You know, Jesus doesn't turn up like my brother with a bag of chips. It's the complete opposite. the point of him coming is so that he can serve us. And we see this even in the chaos of the Christmas story when you look for it. You've got this super important king being born, but he's clothed in rags and his bed is a animal feeding trough. You've got the coming of the greatest person that the world has ever known, but it's only a handful of rough farmers and a few foreigners who even notice. You've got God himself come to be with us, but he comes as a tiny, weak baby. Now, I know as a man, I haven't really experienced even a fraction of what's involved in childbirth. But even in the four births that I've seen more than enough to be astounded that the God who made it all would enter it all by being born as a baby. And why? What was it all about? It was all about him coming not to be served, but to serve. Which is really strange and a little bit confusing when you think about it. I was watching Taylor Swift's Eras Tour the other day on Disney Plus. Did anyone actually get to go and see her live at all? Oh, a few people, okay. At the start, at least on Disney Plus, she's standing on the stage all on her own, surrounded by this sea of adoring fans. I think there's something like 100,000 people there. But imagine Taylor Swift, not in that context, imagine her turning up to Modbury unnoticed, unannounced, and no one really caring. Imagine her knocking on your door of your house and saying, "Hi, I'm here to clean the toilet." I don't know about you, but I would find that a completely strange and disturbing experience. And I'd be kind of confused as to what is going on. Well, the big picture of Christmas is that someone far more important than Taylor Swift is turning up as a baby to serve us. That part of the picture is clear enough. But what's still a bit confusing is why? What's going on with that? So have a look again at why Jesus says he came. He says, "For even the Son of Man, even I did not come to be served, but to serve." And then he adds how he serves us. He says, "I came to give my life as a ransom for many." He didn't come to serve us by being a great teacher or example or just an all-round great guy. In fact, there's nothing nice about why he comes to serve. Jesus comes to serve us by giving his life as the price paid to secure our freedom. That's what a ransom is. It's the price paid for someone's freedom. Zoom out as far as you can go. And that's what Christmas is all about. Jesus coming so he could give his life as a ransom. And again, that's clear enough in the big picture, but even still, that's a bit confusing as to what's going on. Because I don't know about you, but most people don't feel like they need to be set free. Most people aren't going through life thinking that a price needs to be paid for their freedom. I was visiting my dad in New South Wales a couple of months ago, and we were driving along to see one of my sisters when a policeman pulled us over. And I said to my dad, "Were you speeding?" And he said, "No." He had no idea what was going on. And it turns out the police officer's camera, I didn't know they can do this, but it had automatically scanned his number plate and told him that dad was driving an unregistered vehicle. And apparently, it had been unregistered for about 6 months. And the fact that my dad had been happily driving around completely unaware, that fact didn't help him. I mean, the police officer was a nice guy, sympathetic, but still, not only did Dad have to pay the rego and the insurance, he also had a $1,500 fine that someone had to pay. Now, can you see what Jesus is saying to us here? He's saying to us, whether we know it or not, we're not free. In some sense, whether we feel it or not, we're slaves. But I reckon at times we do feel it. I reckon even if you look hard at Christmas time, you can feel it. I mean, if you try and take control of Christmas time and really master it and make it everything you hope and dream it could be, 9 times out of 10, what happens? In my family and in my own heart, I'm often amazed at how quickly discontentment sneaks into Christmas uninvited, or disappointment, or greed, or relationship strain, or unrealistic expectations. And even if you manage to master these things, there are some things that we just can't master no matter what we do. Like your kids move away and you find yourself alone at Christmas. Or your health leaves you and leaves you feeling worried at Christmas. Or death takes someone from you who you love and you feel it especially at Christmas. We want to be our own masters, but even something as small as Christmas shows us how little control we really have. And the truth is, we are mastered by all sorts of things. I mean, you see this super clearly when you look on a global scale. Like, look at Gaza or Ukraine. Or look at politics and society. Or even just look at social media. And don't you feel it? It's like these things have got a hold over us that's beyond us. But that's not even the half of it, because it's not just that we're mastered in a global sense because of people out there somewhere. Trace it all back to its source. And the truth is, we're all slaves to even what lies within us. We all live like we're kings and queens of our own lives. Like yielding ourselves to God's rule would be the worst thing that we could possibly ever do. And how does God respond to our refusal to serve him? How does he respond to us serving our own interests? He comes in Jesus to serve us. Zoom out as far as you can go. And this is the big picture of Christmas. I'm not a huge fan of AI, but someone told me that it's actually really good to get quotes and scientific studies and that kind of thing. So I thought just this once I'd give it a go and I'd see if I could get some really good quotes for us tonight. And what ChatGPT got from it was quite good actually. Like apparently research in 2021 in social psychology, it reveals how consumerism and the constant pursuit of individual identity, it often actually ends up leading to greater anxiety and loss of purpose. You know, there's a kind of hidden slavery right there. I got some other great quotes that tie into this, like apparently Selena Gomez, she said, "I've tried everything to find peace, therapy, self-help books, success, and it all feels like a band-aid. I'm still looking for the real fix." And again, this kind of illustrates a kind of hidden slavery and the need for Jesus to free us. Or ChatGPT gave me this great quote from Bear Grylls, which says, "When I found Christ, it wasn't about me anymore. It was about him and the people I could serve." Now, I thought some of these quotes, they'd actually be good to use. So I thought I'd ask ChatGPT for the source of some of them so that I could go and read the study in context. And then do you know what it says to me? Says, "Apologies for any confusion caused by my earlier reference to a 2021 Frontiers in Psychology study. Upon review, I couldn't locate a specific article that from that year directly linking consumerism to increased anxiety." ChatGPT was putting a nice spin on it, but it had lied to me. So then I thought I'd ask it about the other quotes. And do you know what? No joke, it was the same for all of them. ChatGPT, it seemed so promising, it looked so good, but it wasn't doing what it was designed to do. It wasn't real. It was making stuff up, pretending that it knew what it was doing when it didn't. And do you know what my reaction was? I thought to myself, this is why I hate AI so much and why I wish it didn't even exist. But you know, it strikes me that what we do to God is actually far worse than what ChatGPT sometimes does to us. I mean, it's not really ChatGPT's fault when it gets it wrong. But it is our fault when we get it wrong. We're designed to serve God and to serve each other. But instead we choose to serve ourselves. And we choose it again and again. We know that self-serving leaders are wreaking havoc in our world. But in the domain where we actually get the choice, in small ways and in big ways, we choose to be self-serving. And how does God respond to us? Well, this is what is so astounding. Not with hatred. Not with wishing that we didn't exist. He answers our failures to serve others by coming in Jesus to serve us. I don't know if you've ever tried to connect with someone who's held captive by their phone. I imagine you must have. It's sort of a daily experience, really. You know, you're trying to meaningfully connect with them and you're trying to tell them something that actually matters, but they're just kind of giving non-committal grunts, and sort of smiling dopily at something in front of them, completely missing what you're saying and what really matters to you. You get nowhere with them until, you know, that moment when they put their phone down, they say sorry, and they give you your full attention. But when they do that, in that moment, have you noticed the difference it makes? It's almost like the sun coming out from behind the clouds. It's almost like electricity. It's like the relationship comes alive. Well, my question as I finish today is, have you ever done that with God? Have you ever looked up from what it is that captivates you, the things that hold you captive in life, said sorry, and actually given him your full attention? Because that's what God wants for you. That's why God came to serve you in Jesus, laying down his life for you, to free you so that your relationship could actually come alive with him. And ultimately, that's what the big picture of Christmas is all about.